So, Ido, for those of you who don't know you, this is Ido Cedar. Ido is the founder of a company called Anitra that has a remarkable device that helps people meditate and connect with their bodies. We're going to talk about. Ido's also a dan among many other things, a dance instructor. So, Ido, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about why you're interested both in Anitra and this device and in dance, and what that means, what you think the world needs, and what your contribution is to the, what your message is to the world.
Okay. I could do well with telling about myself, but message to the world. Let's see what stems from my words. So yeah, I'm 52 years old. I've just had my first son born now, and that's very
Mazel
exciting. I've been waiting for him for over 30 years, I suppose, mentally, spiritually getting ready. I live in Tivon, Kiryat Tivon, but originally I'm from Tel Aviv. I grew up in north of Tel Aviv, I started my career actually as a paragliding instructor. That was the first job I held, occupation. I did that for a few years. I was a full-time instructor. Then I wanted to move on in life, and I always had an affinity for software programming. I was doing that as a kid. I had a computer since age 11, so I decided to make that a profession, and I taught myself a little bit, and then took a couple of courses and joined this company that took me in, was working there for a few years. And then I felt that my life were missing something, I decided to get up and travel. I wanted to try to live in New York for a while, and I decided to stop. Or a friend that was supposed to join me said, "Let's stop in India for a couple of months." I said, "Okay, let's do that." So we went to India for a few months, and then everything changed. When I was there, things started to open up for me in many ways. I did the Reiki, which is hands-on healing, that was powerful for me. That was like the first step on the path of being a healer, so to speak. And I did a yoga, which really opened up my body, and I started feeling like I wanted to dance. I felt like a dancer. So both of these routes started happening at that time. I was 27, and so when I got back, I never made it to New York, and not at that time. And when I got back, I decided that it was more interesting for me to do reverse engineering on ourselves and on humans rather than on computers, which is what I was doing until then. And that started me on a journey to discover more about my potential of experiencing life, the depth of experience that I could have in life, and also started being curious about other people more than I was until then. And I started dancing slowly, slowly, from hobby to profession, something that I decided that I want to do as a profession. And I started learning other things like martial arts. I traveled in the US, lived in a motor home in the US for a while, and did martial arts there. And kind of things came together. I came back to Israel. I started my own dojo. I took a lot of more professional dance classes. Slowly, slowly, things evolved where I realized that technology is less interesting for me, and more interesting for me is therapy, like and teaching and movement and dance, and especially dance. Dance, I think, is my main passion. I started creating. I had a tour. Like I lived in New York for a while with a partner there. We choreographed work. We even appeared in the New York Times. We had a review in the New York Times. We came back to Israel, created a little bit here, it never not nothing nothing. I was never able to replace technology completely as a source of income, could never hang the sign on the door that I'm a therapist. I learned, studied Greenberg method and other, but never, like putting the sign on the door saying I'm a therapist was something that's never sat quite comfortably with me all the way. It's like I guess I'm more comfortable with software and hardware, where either you press, like you do something and you press play, and either it works or it doesn't work. And if it doesn't work, you fix it. You have full control versus working with people. You press play, and then it's up to them to do what they do, and so you don't have a control of the results. And that's something, I guess, that's something that I'm working on these days. We can expand on that later, maybe. But I decided at some point a few years ago that I should bring all my passions together, my technological know-how with my passion for the psychology, psychotherapy, and the body as a vessel, the connection to the body as something that's grounding us in reality. I did Vipassana meditation, a couple of courses. I did mindfulness training, and realizing that working through the body, being in the body, feeling, sensing the body is the kind of like the tracks for the train. And that's something that became kind of a practice. And then I met this my co-founder of Anicca, Yechiel, and he brought the idea of the way to stay in the body for longer is to stay connected to the breath, which is what we are being taught anyway in mindfulness and in Vipassana. And because it's difficult, because the mind runs away from staying with the breath, we go on to whatever the mind does usually, and that's to solve problems. So it's not interesting enough for it to just stay with the breath. And the training is to bring it back to the breath, bring it back to the body, so it doesn't run off on its own like it does. And so the idea was to create a device that would vibrate with the breath and will call the consciousness back to the body, back to the breath, and there being able to stay longer with the breath and the body is where the fruits of meditation ripen. The more we are in focus, the more we are present, the more we can process whatever it is that we need to process, rather than running away, which is what the mind usually does. And that's how Anicca was born. We started with prototypes that started being huge and kept getting smaller until we ended up with a what we call it's called a form factor that is quite small, and you're able to just wear it on your waistline, and then you can just turn it on whenever you need help during the day, or when you want to practice, you just turn it on. And
Do
it
you have in
vibrates with
Europe?
your breathing. I didn't bring it down with me, unfortunately. I can jump back up and get it in a moment, or if you can pause
Yeah,
the
let's
recording.
pause. Let's pause and
Okay.
take a look at it. Let's see it.
So this is the device. It's on one side there's a sensor that measures the movement of the belly, and that's how it knows how you're breathing. And inside there's also a vibration motor, and of course a circuit that runs the algorithm of figuring out how you breathe. And then you wear it on your waistline, and you can just throw a clo piece of clothing over it, and then nobody knows that you're using it when you're using it. So you don't have to go to the side and work with your breath or do breath work or any of that. You just turn it on, and then you can stay in the room. Whatever it is that you're doing, or if you're trying to fall asleep, or if you're meditating, and it just works with you and vibrates. And the vibrations are also designed to be pleasant, so they that's like an extra effect on the mind that something is pleasant working in the background.
You know, that's very interesting because with breath work, very often, in order to try to keep the attention on the breath, we do more manipulative forms of breath work. So
That's a very good point.
there's paying
Sorry.
attention to the breath where you hyperventilate or you hold, Then there's paying attention to the breath to just notice the breathing as it is, which is the hardest thing to do because it's the easiest for you to float away from it. What this seems to be doing is helping us do that second thing.
You're right on the mark. This is a big it's a big point. Both Yehiel and me come from meditation and from mindfulness, which is being aware of the present moment. And it's a different practice than breath work. So breath work is to manipulate the nervous system to reduce the stress, to increase the sympathetic arousal, to decrease the sympathetic arousal and increase the parasympathetic arousal, like two branches of the autonomic nervous system. And so doing breath work controls those and plays with them, versus mindfulness practice is actually cultivating ongoing awareness and presence of what is going on right now. And we it's a tougher practice. It's a practice where if you hold with it, if you stay with it, you will get emotion regulation capabilities from in a different way than you would by breathing. Now, it doesn't mean that when stress is very, very high, if you get very anxious, it doesn't mean that you don't use your breath to reduce the anxiety, but you do it out of a more present mindset. You don't want to cultivate your mind into, oh my God, I'm anxious, then I should reduce the anxiety. In mindfulness, you kind of start cultivating a mindset where, okay, I'm anxious. Where do I feel the anxiety in my body? I feel it here, I'm feeling it there. Now I'm going to connect to my breathing and I'm going to let the storm pass. And you're cultivating kind of this observance, observation, observing.
Yeah, another language for that that I really love, like reading and learning from Peter Levine, is the container, is making the container bigger. So when you're using a manipulative practice to handle when you feel dysregulated, you kind of are just trying to chase away the negative experiences you have and bring in positive ones.
Exactly,
So those negative experiences always still feel unsafe. So there's no long-term benefit over time. You're still chasing away the same demons. But when you have a larger container and your freaking out no longer freaks you out as much, you kind of can observe it. Then as your container becomes bigger and the ability, like you're just not scared by these things anymore. They don't faze you and you can like move on to the next level. So there's it's harder. It definitely takes longer to get like that immediate come, but over time, you become a different person and you experience life in a deeper way because you're not running away from the challenging parts of life.
You got it.
Created a
You got it.
device that helps facilitate that practice.
You've got it. And the thing, our device has both two modes. It has two different modes depending on the user's affinity and what they want, because not everybody is ready to take this longer term process. And some people just or some people are really anxious and they just they want, when they're anxious, they want something to tell them how to breathe to calm down. So we have the other mode that we have is the mode of breath work, so to speak, where it uses the golden method, like the most used method of calming down the nervous system, which is prolonging the breath, the exhale over the inhale about time and a half. So it'll join the user where they are and their current breathing, and then it'll lead them into slower breathing.
Oh, wow.
But for a long time, philosophically, we're asking ourselves, as a mindfulness product, we will be talking to some of the people, we will be approaching some of the people, but then if we're looking at a more clinical attitude where people who want help now can use the device, then it's more of the breath work type of thing. And it's a big question. It's a question that was always there for us. And that's also a question of how does a company that needs to be to also be profitable meets the market? And you how do you yeah. And if you look, if you speak to psychotherapists, and we are accompanied by amazing minds, researchers, and who are also psychotherapists, and when you speak to them, they will fit the practice to whoever comes to them. Either they will assign them mindfulness practice, or they'll assign them breathwork practice, and it really depends on where the person is at that moment and what do they need in their life. And so that would be the best approach to see. But you really, and the thing is that in the beginning we didn't really know how to differentiate it. The fact that you differentiated it so well is a compliment to you, because most people they would say mindfulness, and they would just put in, even therapists, they would say mindfulness, and they would just put in everything: breath work, awareness work, and mindfulness work. And basically, like you said, mindfulness is cultivating. I like how you said it, like a bigger vessel or container, where you, with time, you teach yourself how to contain different experiences. By the way, that's also enriching. This is life enriching, because if you are not able to experience your body and feelings, then you're missing out on some of the experiences in life. So
Right. I mean,
that's another thing.
the words that I use to understand this is where what ends up happening is, if we can't contain the experience, if our container is not enough to contain the experience ends up washing over us like a wave, and our consciousness shuts off and we start to just act on autopilot. And this is how we get stuck in, very negative patterns, whether it's addictions or compulsive behaviors or relationship patterns that keep on repeating, the same exact fight with the spouse or the same exact relationship issues, how they always end in the same way. People have these patterns going and nobody wants them, but the reason why they repeat themselves is because the feelings and emotions and body sensations associated with them are so overwhelming to the person that when they come up, the mind is just bails out, and the consciousness bails out, and the person just goes on autopilot. And so when a person has a practice of, when they're not triggered, to expand that container and that ability to handle what's going on with them with a practice like this, to stay in the body, to anchor in the body. So whenever someone tries meditating or being mindful, just keeping yourself doing that, you start to feel a little anxious. You kind of want to move, you kind of want to fidget. And so just dealing with that and learning how to settle into that, go an extra 30 seconds, eventually feel the calm after the storm, even these little storms. Then what ends up happening is, in real life, when things start to go down and get really bad, we don't get knocked offline as easier. Our consciousness is stronger. And then when we finally identify a pattern. That's how this kind of work changed my life, is because all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, this keeps on happening in my life. And that's what a lot of people do in therapy, is they talk to a therapist and they try to, in their mind, to identify these patterns of what's going on. But when you can do that with by yourself, by being aware of your body, and that these light bulbs come spontaneously in life, it's you're one of these quotes is like, if you know what you're doing, you can do what you want.
I like that.
And Moshe Feldenkrais said that, if you know what you're doing, you can do what you want. But what happens is that when we start getting into, and I know this happens to me all the time, when I see negative things in my life that are festering and don't stop, I start to try to really pay attention, like, what is going on over here in me? This is really cool. So how does what's the stage of this device? If someone's listening to this and wants to try it, how does that work out? Like, where are you at? I don't know. Where are things at with this amazing, magical thing? I just wanted the listeners to know that I tried this once. I think it was a year or two ago. I went, we're going to talk about dance soon. I went to take a dance class with Ido, which completely blew my mind away. It was started off as the most awkward and painful experience, and by the end of it, I could not, like, I was so sad it was over. It felt so good. But then afterwards, I wore the device, and it really magnified the sensation of being in the body. It was so immediate, and it didn't feel like I was being manipulated. It was very gentle, and it was very soothing, and it felt like an immediate flow. I could really sense the difference between the inhale and the exhale, because the vibration would turn off on one up or the other. Like, you could choose where it goes on, where it goes off. And just being able, that calmness, it was almost like the calmness you feel like you sense when you're rocking a baby. Like, it was just so, I felt so held in the experience of it. It's really, really incredible. So if someone wants to try this, is it possible? How does it work right now?
Well, right now it's just the waiting list on our website. We haven't decided. We're pre-market. We haven't decided yet if we're going to go the clinical route or the consumer route, wellness route. Both have advantages and disadvantages. Right now we're designing with the Kaplan Hospital, Kaplan Medical Center. We're in the neonatal intensive care unit. We're designing a clinical study that would help women who just gave birth to premature babies and their babies are in the NICU help them reduce their stress levels. It's a very specific use case, but if it works, there's a couple of things that can happen there. First of all, it could be a clinical market where we would be able to sell to hospitals rather than to consumers, and then the second thing is that it'll corroborate, it will support by a clinical study what we claim, you know, by our mouths that it works. We did our own pilots with people in the community, so we know that it works, but this will give us a more solid clinical support. And then and yeah, and it's a very stress-ridden environment, like being a mother to a newborn that's in the neonatal intensive care unit. And also this is an interesting use case because stress has been shown to inhibit milk production. And in the NICU, mother's milk is, they call it cure medicine. They call it the mother's milk is medicine for the baby. They want the mothers to give the, and also outside of the NICU as well, mothers that pump milk or breastfeed get numerous benefits from it. Just the first benefit is that it'll help the womb contract faster after childbirth than if you don't breast, if you don't, like, if there's no sucking on the nipple. And second, there's bonding, and then the baby develops better, and there's cognitive benefits for the baby and for long-term development, and the mother gets protected from ovarian cancer, and I think it's ovarian or cancer around the genitals, and breast cancer numbers are down if you're breastfeeding or milk pumping. So, and the World Health Organization recommends breastfeeding, like milk only for 6 months before anything else. So it's really, really beneficial
You're
to
touching on an
have.
interesting factor, which is the how much stress affects health, and the health of the nervous system is very much will have an impact on the health of the immune system and the digestive systems and all the other systems. And especially when you're talking about a relationship between a mother and a baby. When we're born as babies, we kind of there's this idea in the somatic world and that we borrow as babies, we borrow the nervous systems of our parents. If our parents are regulated and calm, then our nervous system starts to create those patterns within the nervous system of the baby will start to build those as the child grows up. The brain is very plastic and it's kind of taking in what's happening in the surroundings. And so this device is like this the ability to help a mother feel more calm and regulated. The impact on her health and the child's health and the nervous system health and the health of the family in the long run, it's very big.
You got it. You got it. You're really saying it very well. I do want to say something about stress. Stress in itself is not a bad thing. Chronic overstress is. So we're designed to experience stress levels. We don't have to now everybody run and buy an Icha or start meditating or doing breath work to reduce their stress levels because that will only get us stressed. And studies have been done that the way people stress will affect people worse if they believe that stress is bad for you. So, but also these kind of studies also have artifacts in them. It's endless. It's like a mirror, you know, it's a tunnel of mirrors.
Well,
In
that
general, just
touches on
saying,
what we were talking about earlier, which is when you try chasing away the stress,
exactly.
you're chasing the same demons. The idea is, can you actually hold it and be okay with it?
Exactly. It's like, you know, it's like going to the gym. You are building a muscle and it builds slowly. So every day or every week or every month, you will see it's very, very slow gains in the amount of weight that you're able to carry. And you go to the gym to lift weights, you know, if you're a weightlifter, I'm just saying go to the, you can practice at home and everything, but you go there, you work out to get stronger. So when you do need your muscles in everyday life, you will have a stronger muscle. So it's the same here. Like you're building your muscle. Every day you're able to deal with things a little bit better. But stress in itself is like it shouldn't be an end. It's like something that we have innate in us. And it's a mechanism, but if it's overused, like everything, any other thing, if it's overused, then health problems can happen. So I just want to kind of open a parenthesis around that. But yeah, prenatal stress, there's perinatal stress, which is stress around birth, and then there's prenatal stress where the baby is still in the womb. And you know, like with everything else, you don't want to stop smoking just when you get pregnant. You don't want to stop drinking when you get pregnant. You want to start these things earlier on, and then you want to kind of cultivate it before, cultivate it through, and also, you know, once you give birth as well, you want to give the best environment for your child. But getting stressed over get over giving your child the best environment will just get you more of that stress. And I think in a way you touched a little bit about it, we are how we approach life is really like something that's part of our personality, or let's say I call it the neuroticism level. Like so if we come to deal with stress, then that's not gonna work. We, like you said, we focus on the breath, and things will let's say the container will be
Right.
larger.
So I think what the way I would word what you're saying is that we're looking, as long as we're fighting an enemy, then the enemy is within us. The idea is to find a place of neutrality. And that's why getting in touch with the body is so important, because it does put us in a more neutral space. When you're just noticing what your senses are telling you. And the chatter of the mind, which is constantly trying to categorize good versus bad, quiets down. there opens up this neutral space where, yeah, that might be bad and that might be good, but it's okay that it's there. It's not. It reminds me actually of a story I saw last night. I really like this story. It's a story about how the different permutations of the devil through history. So first it started as a snake. So when God created the world, he wanted there to be a good side and a bad side. So for the bad side, he made a snake. And the snake complained to God, "No one's going to listen to me. Well, like, who's going to listen to me?" He's like, "Don't worry, they're going to listen to you." So then they go and the snake tricks Chava. She listens to him. She eats the tree, and then they get kicked out into the world. The snake comes back and complains to God, "No one's going to listen to me now." So he changed the snake into the angel of death, and he works as the angel of death until Abraham. And then at Abraham, they had to be changed into Satan. And then Moses came, and Moses brought down the commandments and everything. And now everyone knew about Satan. So said, "Okay, we're going to change you into ego. You're going to become the ego." So now even people who are doing all the good things and all the religious things are going to feel so egoic about themselves, and that's how you're going to get people. And then what ended up happening was is then the Hasidic movement started. And so then they started teaching about the ego and saying how, well, everyone's the same. Doesn't make a difference if you're a big scholar or a simple person. It's all about how you're connecting to God. And so then he's like, "Well, what do you want me to do now?" And so then you know what he became? He became the fear of ego. People today will be afraid to do the right thing because they fear the ego that's going to come from it. And so it's the reason why that what you were saying reminded me of the story is that if we're always trying to run away from stress, it will find a way to trick us into getting stressed over not being stressed. And the only way
Exactly.
to really beat it is to step back into a more neutral place and just learn how to be. Just do the right thing. Just do what's good. Don't worry about all the noise. And so let's segue. So I really hope there is a day where Anarch is the kind of thing where it's like Amazon buy with one click and you have it at your door the next day. Anyone can use it.
I hope so too.
Like, why not? It should be.
Well, somebody's gotta get the company from a product that's doing wonderful things into a product that can actually end up in people's hands. And that doesn't seem to be something that's easy for me. And that's where this is what I'm dealing with these days, is to realize that nothing that I do will please or work for 100% of the people 100% of the time. And even Anicca, because it uses vibration, won't be pleasant for 100% of the people, or that it will not, they will not cut, they will not stay with it, they will not engage. And then, so I kind of, my concern is that people will pay for something and then they will not get 100% out of it. And this is something that I'm dealing with within my personality at the moment, within like thinking, trying to unpack this for myself, how you can do a business that would be moral, and like give the best service on one hand, and on the other hand that will also be profitable, because otherwise it's not sustainable. So that's basically
Hey,
just a
you'll
small
make
anecdote.
it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about dance. What's really interesting about the dance is it's almost the dance practice is almost the opposite of what you would think the mindful and the meditation practice is. So when you think of like getting in touch with yourself in a mindful way, you think of someone in absolute stillness, no movement whatsoever, just sitting and being. But dance is a whole nother world where the movement is actually constant and it's sometimes very fast, could be slower, faster. And I think that to a lot of people, it might be hard to understand how movement could benefit one in their development of self-awareness more than being still could. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that from your perspective.
Right. So dance and movement is movement, and mindfulness is mindfulness, and they're kind of a part of the same parcel. For me, if you remember, I start my classes usually on the floor in a mindfulness practice, experiencing your body. Moving forward into the practice, I teach the people that they have to like what they're doing, even at times where it's not pleasant, because if they don't like what they're doing, they will not be connected. And if they're not connected, they're not going to be interesting, neither to themselves nor to the public that the performers serve. And that in a way cultivates mindfulness. That's what it cultivates, the same thing, but instead of experiencing your pain, and what do you call it? Aversions and passions, desires, aversions and desires, you practice it in dance. And you actually like, I like this movement, I don't like this movement, I like this music, I don't like this music, I like what I feel, I don't. No, you like. If you don't like right now, you won't be able to do the performance work that's needed, the embodiment that's needed. So for me, they're part of the same thing, and maybe even more, because it's like it's mindfulness in movement. That said, mindfulness is when it supports my dance practice, like I mentioned, the ability to also, any dancer, that anybody that wants to become a dancer has to work so hard with their body, that without cultivating the acceptance of pain, of unpleasantness, will not be able to survive a dance training, because you really, that's on the physical side, but also on the emotional and mental side, like I just mentioned. That said, I don't necessarily immediately dance for anything besides dancing, besides creating, besides the aesthetics, besides the poetics, besides being a poet, besides sharing and being part of a poem, performing, which is not easy for me, but I still love it. So I don't see dance as something for something. I see dance as the practice and the goals in itself. That said, I see a lot of benefits on the emotional and mental and physical and behavioral levels of people that come through the classes, and also people that create. So it's a bit strange, but in a way, because if you do it for X, then you don't really do it. But if you really do it, then X will potentially change.
Right. Wouldn't you say the same thing? Would you say the same thing about mindfulness as well?
It's working with the mind. It's called, I think they call it, in some scholars call it, right type of effort. And you mentioned it before, like if you run away, like if you want to change something, then you're already in a practice that's not benefiting the change. So if you are anxious, or if you're angry, or if you're just in pain and you want it to go away, and you succumb to the wanting to go away, you're not doing the practice. So it's like you embrace it. You want it to you reverse the wanting. Somebody mentioned yesterday in some podcast, you reverse the wanting. You want it to stay, and then it'll go away. So you're right. It's paradoxical.
Right. So the way you just described the dance is fascinating, because what you're saying is that in the process of dancing, I definitely experienced this with you. You're definitely experiencing things that are uncomfortable and unpleasant. But in order to dance, you must embrace that. And so, in order to make it meaningful in any way.
In order to do contemporary creative performative
Right,
dancing, yes. Yes.
right.
If you just put on music and you just, enjoy yourself moving, yeah. But if you want to dance with others, if you want to dance to an audience, if you want to be a creative dancer, where a choreographer, where you build work, all of that requires a lot of stamina.
Right, and so I remember fighting through this for, I don't remember how long it was, but it felt like it was for quite a while. And then at some point there was this tipping point. And I don't know if you experienced, I don't know, this is what I experienced, was there was this tipping point where I began to love it all, and I was just flowing and I wasn't thinking anymore, and it was ecstatic. And it lasted. I remember a couple weeks after we did this, I was about to approach someone and I started feeling a little bit nervous and self-conscious, and I immediately felt it, like the nervousness and the awkwardness put me right back to where I was in the beginning of the dance class, and then I just went straight forward and I approached this person.
Nice.
Because it generated a certain pattern in me that I felt very strong afterwards was still there. So maybe you talk about like what that is, or what that experience has been for you and for your students, because you've had many students who you've taught for over the years.
Yeah, I'm teaching regularly, I think, for 12 years now. I love it. It's the best thing that the thing I enjoy most in the week from everything else that I do. First of all, it's slowing down the mind into the pace of the body. The mind can be everywhere. It loves to be everywhere. It makes us free because we can just travel. But when we want to approach something difficult, if we have the tendency to just fly off whenever something difficult happens, then we are not going to have control of the situation. And bringing back the mind into the body, slowing it down and bringing it into the body, you're bringing it into the current moment, and then you're dealing with it. And then things start to open up. And you didn't run away. Like I could see in the beginning that you were, I remember you were close to the door a lot of in the beginning of the class. And then you didn't run away. You went through the how do you call it, the hole of the needle, and then you started to enjoy it. So it's really and some days we would be and even this can create expectations, because let's say now you remember how blissful it was, and then you'll come back into class. Let's say tomorrow you'll join me in the class, and you will be expecting to be to enjoy yourself, and then you will come, and then you will feel again the resistance, because it's there for us, for everyone that's coming into the studio and hasn't seen people for a long time, like these particular people, and then you'll have to do the work again to come out the other side. So it's not for everyone. It's not you would every like every class that there will be somebody new. Sometimes they would just w go away. They will not be able to contain the difficulties. And I don't know what I just think it's a beautiful practice, and I think everybody should have a practice in their life where it's challenging them, making them expand their container, like you said, or strengthen the container. I don't remember exactly the word that you said, but would be able to would make them would challenge them, but would also be have bliss at the end of the challenge. So you're willing to go through, and you learn this. You learn one of the things that I try, that I have in mind when I teach these classes, that I'm teaching the people how to find the route into this bliss of being in what Anna Halpering, the late Anna Halpering, said, the dance state. You kind of want to find this route into the dance state, and you want to stay in the dance state as much as possible, because that's why we do it. That's where everything, all the I don't know, being part of a story, and writing a story with other people, and improvising with them, and it's,
And life is very much a dance. If you can bring that into life and just see interactions less about conflict and more about, the dance. The dance also has
if
conflict, but then it becomes a dance.
I look at it as a way of having an artistic eye in life. So you can be involved in the situation, but also outside a little bit. And my son was born early. He was born preterm, apropos having designing a study that's supposed to take place in the NICU, and then having a premature child. It was very, very cosmic. But when he was born, and he was taken out of the emergency room, my partner was out of the operation room. My partner was there, still being operated on. They took him as a cesarean. They take him out and bring him in this incubator, and they're pumping air into him. Somebody. This little doctor covered with all these sterile clothes, and pumping air into him because he wasn't breathing on his own. And I'm like, and I, of course, this is a shocking situation for me as a father and a partner. My partner is in the operation. My newborn child is coming out and being taken into the emergency room, and the elevators in that hospital don't work. The staff is amazing. The elevators are not very. Was very, very stressful and overwhelming. But at the same time, I wanted to document it. At the same time, I felt this was a very special moment. And also throughout the NICU stay, these were like, I'm having the chance of holding this human creature that was not supposed to be outside of the womb, and raising it outside of the womb. So, like, if you're able to see the story, like, when we see a movie, and we read a book, and we can enjoy it, even when it's a sad movie, even when it's a scary movie. But even if we were in the sad movie, we wouldn't be enjoying that movie, because we were the characters who were experiencing it. But as somebody that's watching it, was like, oh, I'm crying with the movie, I'm touched by the movie. So I was in the movie. But I'm also able to be outside of the movie and enjoy the existential experience of raising a baby outside of the womb, and being with it when it's so vulnerable and so tiny. It's like so heart-opening. So it brings out lots of oxytocin, not oxytocin,
Oxytocin.
oxytocin, yeah. So that's what I mean, is that's when you cultivate an artistic eye, and you see everything both as you're experiencing it, but also as part of something that's bigger than you. The story of creation, if you like, mentioned the
Yeah.
biblical story of it. Yeah. It's like, wow, we're part of this journey. We're part of the human journey. We're part of the Tikkun Olam in Judaism, they call it. So that the ability to, like, do this zoom in, zoom out, zoom in, zoom out. That's, I think, one of the things that really are being an artist helped me achieve.
Yeah. Well, I think you answered my original question that you weren't sure you were going to answer. What's
Which was,
the
oh, what
message
is my
to
message to them?
the... Because it seems that in all these practices, whether it's Anicca or the dance, you're helping people. You yourself are you're going on this experience of being able to kind of You're in the story, but you also see the beauty of the story. And I think that it takes a special person to look at dance, because a lot of people I know, I worked with someone who's a dancer. Like, dancers don't necessarily have, just because you're a dancer doesn't mean you get this. If you have to approach it in a specific way. And actually, one of the things that I've learned working with a dancer is that, and maybe for people who do dance or do other forms of movement, this could be a really good thing to think about when you're trying to approach mindfulness or meditation or becoming more regulated and aware, is that your movement can, and probably if you're a dancer, should be a huge part of your awareness practice, your self-awareness practice. Because when I've worked with a dancer, my experience has been is that when this person is still, they'll get a certain result. If they're trying to work through something stressful, and I'm talking to him about something that's stressful, he will get a certain level of result. But if he, in the moment of contemplation, will allow himself to move, even just around the room, however he wants, and just explore how he's thinking about this issue while he's moving and dancing and moving around with his body, in the middle of a coaching session, I said, just what do you think? And he, at this point, he knows this is how he processes. Within 2 minutes, something that was blocked is opened up. And there's so many pathways to getting these results, and everybody needs to find their own.
I think it's very profound what you're saying, because when moving, stress a lot of the time is movement unspoken. Okay? It's like when we're kids, you see children, babies, something's bothering them, they express it right away. You call it before acting out. You didn't call it acting out, but it's like acting out. If we're not aware, we just act out immediately, like babies, like children. And then stress a lot of the time comes if I'm holding back. So I want to say something, but I'm concerned, so I'm holding back, and then I accumulate it inside, and then I get stressful and whatnot. Or in the NICU, you want to jump in with the doctors and you want to resuscitate your child, but you can't because it's not your job, it's their job, and they know it, how to do it better, but your nervous system is still on because it intuitively wants to do it. Or you run around, or other people maybe would run and run around out of the door. So when you have somebody moving while they're going through something, you're actually joining the natural rhythm of wanting to move. You want to move away from it, or you want to move closer to it. So it's kind of easier to process something when you're in movement, because it's an energy. And it wants you to move. So that's just reminded me. And yeah, something else. So when you say message to the world, now it escaped me. I do want to say something else about dance. Dance, doing art and dance is an ability to also, if you want to tackle personal stories and memories, and you want to recreate them through art, or you want to look at them through, if you use them as an art object, you are able to revisit them in it with the artistic eye and with the artistic context. You're able to maybe do closures on things, or you're able to maybe closure is a big word, but understand them better, do small steps of closures. That's something else that dance or art in general is very, very good for. That's just something else that I remembered. But you can use it in your sessions. If they're dealing with somebody, and a lot of the time when we get stressed, it's usually about people. We could allow you could allow them to enact or to see things. Like maybe put themselves in the room where the situation is, and where they would place themselves in the room while when you're working with them. What kind of body posture would they hold at that moment, or the person that's giving them stress, where would they would stand, or what kind of body posture they would be holding. And in that sense, you're kind of helping them process the situation in a protected, artistic, or
Container.
reconstructive environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just something
Yeah, I mean
that
it's
might occur to you.
brilliant. I mean it's when we use our imagination, there's so many ways. See, because when we're stuck in life, in the real life scenario, we feel stuck because we can't handle the impact that our environment and the high stake pressure of our environment with the emotions we're dealing with inside. So if we could find a safe environment to deal with the same emotions where our actions wouldn't have a negative consequence. So we could say whatever we want, we could act out whatever we want, and we can explore what's the body sensations and the emotions and everything that's going on in a way that's creative and it's play. Then there's opportunities that open up to us. And when we approach, like that was my experience after dancing, when I was kind of felt like I would not have approached this person and spoken had I not danced, because I would have not experienced going out of the comfort zone and realizing, wow, it's actually even better this way. And there and yeah, it really, really helps. And I didn't even go into the dance session expecting that, or probably because I didn't go into it expecting that. I just went to meet you and see what you were about.
Expectations are the worst thing for any successful endeavor. But I want to say that I just want to revisit when you say, what's my message to do to people? And I think one of the things that really, and I mentioned it early on with the NICU experience, one of the things that really helped me is to understand that I'm part of a bigger story, that I'm not, that I'm not just Ido and just and what's happening to Ido and with all the drama that this can bring. I'm actually part of creation, and I'm just another link, and my family and my child another link in this story, and we're all working on getting better. Like at doing things better. Like we are born, we grow up, we do what the best thing we can, like becoming the best people that we can, both in morally but also functionally. And then we have children, and then we try to, we help our children, give them the knowledge that we've accumulated, and they will take it a step, like a software upgrade over us. And I think, and I see this is what kind of how I see, how I like to look at things. And I think I see it as a universal truth. I think, like, you can believe in God, you can believe in Satan, you can believe in ego, you can believe in spiritual work, you can, but there's a lot of ways to tell the story that's going on here. But empirically, what I see is biology, and I see how biology, if you still have to subscribe to creationism, not creationism, sorry, to evolution, sorry, evolution, but you can see that everything is trying to evolve, and that's something that I can see with my own eyes, and that's something I can subscribe to. So I don't know if there's a God or not. I do believe and want to believe there's a God, but I definitely know there's evolution, and so I'm happy to be part of that.
Meaning every trying to be better.
Yes, exactly. Shouldering the effort of evolution to become ever more, I think, yeah, ever more better, whatever that means.
Yeah, I hear that. It reminds me of a story once. There was a guy who asked the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He asked him, I don't remember how it started, but he basically said, like, What does it take to be considered like one of your people? You know, is it that I wear the garb? Is it that I do all the things? I'm not going to do all the things. I'm not going to wear the garb. Like, what does it take? And he answered him like this. It reminds me of exactly what you just said. He said, anybody who was working today to be a better version of themselves than they were yesterday, you know, as a person, as a human being. He also mentioned in the religious practice, but he but it was but the core idea was anybody who's working to become a better person, to be better today than they were yesterday, I considered one of my people. And it takes an open-mindedness, and it takes an approach to just always willing to work and learn and explore new things.
I'm gonna sag, I'm not sure how to say that word, but I'm gonna just say, you say work, and that reminded me that the most interesting performers in my class are people that work while they're performing. They never stop working. They never stop trying to figure out how to stay on the stage in the dance and get the idea of what's next in the performance. And that's most interesting people to see because they're alive. They're alive inside.
They're paying
So
attention.
they're paying attention.
It's, I mean, all the I all the good things that have really come my way in life, I realized it was because I was really, really paying attention. I was really working on what it, you know, it was not just a go with the flow, you know, and when I see that I'm not really getting anywhere, I realized, wow, I think I've been sleeping.
That's a good point. That's a very, very good point.
I've been learning a
That's
lot
a very good
recently. I've
point.
been learning a, not a lot, but a little bit. I've been learning about lucid dreaming, which is the practice of trying to cultivate awareness while you're dreaming. And one of the things that's very interesting about that is a lot of the things that a person needs to do in order to be successful at that is to make sure they're awake when they're awake. Because if you're sleeping when you're awake, how do you expect to be awake when you're sleeping? And most of us are sleeping while we're awake.
We're dreaming, it's true. It's true.
Okay. Anyways, Ido, it was such a pleasure.
It's
If
always a
anybody
pleasure,
wants to
Ari.
join your dance classes and Israel wants to join your classes, how do they?
They come on Monday, 11:15, a few minutes earlier to process the to go through reception. Monday 11 at Naim Studio in Florentine. Salome 39. It's open class, so anybody that comes that day is part of the ensemble. And it's a 2 hours class. I like the process. So that's it.
Okay. And if anybody wants to contact you about Anachar or ask you some questions or maybe be involved in the project, how can they reach you?
Well, you know, you can put post my phone number or email or any of those.
Okay. I'll put it
I'm
wherever I
open.
put this discussion, I'll put your contact info below.
Sure. That's
Okay.
great.
All right, Ido, it
All
was a
right. Thank you. It's
pleasure.
a pleasure.